So we're going to talk about the next section of this Maimer Basi Lagani, which, as we mentioned yesterday, is the previous Rebbe's last essay that he wrote. And we spoke about the first chapter. The first chapter talks about the idea that Hashem created the world in order to have a place where he could be comfortable with human beings serving and worshiping him. And you should feel welcomed and you should feel honored and respected the same way a person would have a home, a house that they build. And why are you building a home? Why are you starting a family? Because you want to have people that love you, plain and simple. You don't want to be in a place where people are giving you aggravation and giving you tsaris. Hashem says the same thing. Hashem says, I want to be in a world where people are respecting me and people are doing what I am asking them to do. And where I have nachas, I have pride and joy from them. And in the first chapter, we spoke about the Medrash that says that Hashem was very upset when Adam and Chava ate from the tree of knowledge, and later on with the sins of killing one brother, killed another, Cain kills Hevel, and we have this story of the people worshiping idols and all kinds of other stuff, the generation of the flood. Hashem withdrew further and further from interacting in a certain spiritual way with the world. Obviously, he still created and gave energy and gave life, but not what we're going to talk about, the Shechina. And that's something we're going to be speaking about in later chapters. What does it mean, in fact, that Hashem withdrew from the world if Hashem is giving life anyway to the world? What does it mean that the Shechina is resting in the world? And what does it mean that the Shechina withdraws from the world? And what does it mean that we're bringing down the Shechina to the world, Hashem's presence? So this we're going to be discussing in more detail in later chapters, but at any rate, we do say from the Medrash that Hashem eventually became happy when Abraham came on the scene, and then Abraham's children for seven generations until Moshe, and eventually Hashem said to Moshe, I am going to instruct you to build the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, the first Beis HaMikdash, and in the Beis HaMikdash, you are going to be having a sort of an intimate relationship with me, with my Shechina, with my presence, and I will instruct you how to build the Beis HaMikdash in order to accomplish that. I will instruct you which materials to use. I will instruct you which rooms to build, which furniture to place in, and first and foremost, what is the service? What to do in the Beis HaMikdash to create this relationship? And this is what we're starting now in chapter two. We're talking about the work in the Mishkan. What was the work in the Mishkan? So the work in the Mishkan was, the Rebbe writes, Birurim. Birurim is a Hebrew word that means refining the world around us. Refining the world. What does it mean, refining the world? Just like you would have a mixture of let's say, oil and water, olive oil. You press olives and you have water, olives together with material, and you want to have pure olive oil. So you have to refine it. You have to take out the content of the mixture that's not doing the job of what the mixture is supposed to do. Refining petroleum, refining gold, which is mixed with silver, which is mixed with other metals. So you'd have to melt it down and eventually you're left with the pure metal. Refining means that there are things in the mixture that are not allowing the essential component of the mixture to do its job, and that are in fact blocking the essential component of the mixture from being effective. So in the case of silver, you don't have silver mixed with other metals, that doesn't look like silver. Gold mixed with other metals doesn't look like gold. And the refining process separates out the dross, separates out the stuff that is not expensive or the desired material from the desired material. That's our job. Our job, we are placed here in this world to be refiners of the world. What that means is, in the language of Kabbalah and Chassidus, language of the Zohar, the klipa is covering up Hashem's presence, is covering up Hashem's energy. And our job is to refine the klipa from the kedusha, to refine out, to take out the holiness aspect from the cover-up aspect. And the way we do that is by looking at the physical world as fuel for a greater purpose. And that's plain and simple. That's the long and short of it. In other words, and I talked about this yesterday also, that the physical, many times I mentioned, Chassidus explains that the word for the world is olam. Olam means a world, but it also means from the Hebrew word he'elem, which means to conceal and cover up. And our job is to play this game of hide and seek with Hashem. Hashem is hiding in the materiality, in the materialism of the world. And our job is to find Hashem's presence, to uncover the truth of the world, which is that it doesn't exist for itself. And this is called birurim, refining materiality, through subduing man's physical nature, as he says here in the translation, which brings one to the even higher goal of transforming darkness into light. This is all, you know, wonderful poetry, transforming darkness into light and subduing your physical nature. But all these words mean is that we should not get fooled by looking at the world that's around us and think that nature runs itself. We should not get fooled by looking at the world around us and think it's there for us to enjoy ourselves full stop. Yes, Hashem wants us to enjoy ourselves. Yes, nature has laws that by which it operates, but it's all for the purpose of serving Hashem. Literally, to understand that it's fuel and not an end in itself. It's all a means to reach the end, and the end and the goal is realization that Hashem is the boss. That's plain and simple to see through the veil, to see through the cover-up, to see through the klipa, and to recognize that really it's Kedusha, really it's holiness. And the way we show that we recognize that is how we act, how we use it. And therefore, this process of looking through the veil, of uncovering the truth of the world, this process was accomplished through the Beis HaMikdash. And Hashem gave us the Beis HaMikdash in order to help us through this process. What was the Beis HaMikdash in the temple? What did they do? They offered up animal offerings. And the Rebbe points to the pasuk, the verse that says, if a person brings an offering to Hashem of the cattle, of the herd, of the flock, shall you bring your offering? But it doesn't say if a person brings. It says if a person from you brings. And this wording is a little problematic, because it should have said a person who brings an offering, says a person from you will bring an offering. Just the grammar is a little bit off. And therefore, what all the commentaries explain is, and the Rebbe quotes it here, is that when you bring a karban, or bring an offering to the Beis HaMikdash, the point is not to bring just the animal, but to actually bring yourself as an offering. And the animal is simply a mechanism of allowing and helping yourself to be that offering. And we explain that the word for offering is a karban. The word karban literally means a sacrifice or an offering, but it also comes from the Hebrew word karov, which means come close. And the intention, therefore, is that when a person comes into the Beis HaMikdash and brings an animal offering or a flower offering or a wine offering or offering of oil or whatever, olive oil, that is a mechanism for coming close to Hashem. And again, coming close to Hashem doesn't mean that you take three steps forward or you jump up high, or you twist to the right, or twist to the left. It means that you take a look at the world around you, and you realize, and you recognize, and you act that way according to your realization that Hashem is the boss, meaning you act according to Hashem wants. That's coming close. But it means coming close. It's not a physical space. It's a mental and emotional and spiritual space that you're coming close to Hashem. And this is what we're understanding here, and we're explaining here in these few chapters from the Rebbe, that a person has the ability through the energy and through the mechanisms that Hashem gives us, a person has the ability to approach even the holiness of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. We could even be as great as them, and there's no obstacle that can stop us from elevating ourselves and attaining a closeness to Hashem, and Hashem gives us this ability. Now, is it going to happen? Well, most people, 99.9%, never reach, of course, the level of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. There's a few generations, tzaddikim in each generation, that are that great, but we all can be greater than we are today, that's for sure. And the karban means coming close. There's no limit to how close you can come to Hashem. Hashem is infinite. So every day we can come closer and closer. And this is what we're talking about here, that the karban is the idea, that offering is the concept of offering up what? Offering our own animal inside of us. And as the Rebbe explains here, that just like in the Beis HaMikdash, it was possible to either offer a bull or a cow or a sheep or a goat or even flour, so too people's Yetzaharas take different forms. For some people, the Yetzahara is raging like a bull in a china shop, like a wild bull. Person is absolutely out of control. It doesn't have to be in every element of your life, but in some elements of your life, you totally can't control whatever it is that you don't, you know, that Hashem really doesn't want you to be doing. In some elements of our life, we are like sheep, meaning we're more docile or more gentle. It's still a problem, but it's still an animal, but it's a little less of an intensity and sometimes a little less of intensity. So regardless of what it is that is blocking us, that is stopping us from acting 100% according to the way Hashem wants, we have the ability through offering up our Yetzirah to come closer to Hashem. And when we do that, the Rebbe continues, we actually create energy. Offering up the Yetzirah, sacrificing the Yetzirah is what creates energy. And the way we understand this process, the Rebbe continues, is by looking at the materials from which Hashem specifies in the Chumash that the Mishkan should be constructed from. So in the Chumash, it doesn't say, just build me a sanctuary. In the Chumash, it actually says, build me a sanctuary from specific materials. What are those materials? It has to be made from wood. And the wood itself was called shittim wood, which is a certain species of cedar. It's acacia wood, a certain species of cedar. And the word shita, the name of the type of wood that the Torah gives us, is related with the same letters as the word for foolishness, which is shtus. And Rebbe explains that when a person does a sin, the only reason a person would do a sin of any kind, whether it's even a small sin or definitely a big sin, is because you're momentarily lose your sense of right and wrong. If a person always has a sense of right and wrong, who's going to jump off a building? Nobody. But a person gets drunk or gets high enough, then you can smash your car, you can jump off a building, you can hit somebody, start up with somebody who's bigger than you, is going to beat you up, or you can even do small stuff. So obviously, if there's something that's clearly evident that you're going to suffer from, nobody's going to do that thing, whether it's a small or a big thing, unless you lose your mind, unless you're acting in a very certain sense of foolishness. And the same is true of any sin, because the truth of the matter is, the Rebbe says, and we learned this in Tanya, that the nefesh elokeis, the godly soul, controls the body. Why does the godly soul control the body? Because our mind rules our heart by nature. That's why you see that kids are pure. Little children are pure. They understand right and wrong. A little child understands without even being taught. Unless the child is shown and is given a bad example, a little child by nature wants to be good, wants approval from its parents, wants approval. Well, just understands that you're not supposed to do things doesn't mean a person won't be selfish, doesn't mean a person won't have certain character issues to overcome by nature. But the fact of the matter is that by nature, we have purity. And then what happens is that the Yetzirah gets into our head, and the Yetzirah gives us all kinds of advice that is not good advice. And the Yetzirah, in fact, precedes the Yetzer Tov, because for the first 12 or 13 years before Bar and Bat Mitzvah, the Yetzer Tov is not fully formed, the good inclination. And the Nefesh of Bahamas, the Yetzirah, is what's ruling us. And therefore, it gets us to do all kinds of things. But if we are looking with clarity and we're thinking about what we're doing and not just going along with the flow, then there's no way that a person will do something wrong. Where do we see this? How do we see, what's the proof for this concept? The proof is that when it comes to a certain test that a person is absolutely clear that if they do this thing, you're going to cross a major red line. You're no longer going to be the person that you really want to be. For example, God forbid, conversion, forced conversion. We're not talking about a person who is falling asleep in the cold, and a person who is frostbitten and dies because they're just plain sleeping and passive in that way. But a person proactively doing it, this is something that Jews have always given up their life throughout all the generations, and that is because at a certain red line, you can't fool yourself anymore. What the Rebbe is proving here, and the Rebbe speaks about this in Tanya also, is that when a person sees very clearly in front of their eyes that if you take this step, you're going to be disconnecting from Hashem. You will never do that step. So if that's the case, how can we do certain sins? And the answer is because we're not realizing, we're not thinking clearly. If we were thinking clearly, we would not never do that thing. This is the goal of the Beis HaMikdash. This is the goal of bringing the Karbanos, that it should give us clarity in our actions, Beis HaMikdash, by virtue of the fact that a person brought the Karban, it created a certain clarity in your mind, it created a certain attachment to spiritual energy, and it fought against the effect that the animal soul wants to have, which is to keep us dumb, to keep us unthinking. And this chapter explains to us, therefore, how the spirit of folly and a person's powerful desires, which is the Yetzer Hara, the animal soul, can obscure the truth. And the truth is that Hashem is the boss. Hashem is the source of our energy. And it makes a person dull when it becomes regarding sensitivity to spirituality, to close being close to Hashem. It takes away your value, appreciation for the value of mitzvahs. It takes away your a person's natural want to be close to God and to be close to spiritual and holy things. And instead, it makes the person actually believe that material things are better than spiritual things. And that's only because of the Yetzer Hara. So therefore, in the next chapter, we talk about the fact that the person is, in fact, the neshama is connected to Hashem by a cord that is metaphorically considered to be a rope that has 613 individual strands to this rope. Every time you do a mitzvah, you strengthen one of those 613 strands of the rope, the connection between Hashem and the Jewish people, Hashem and the neshama. Every time you do a sin, you cut one of those strands. If you do a terrible, terrible sin, you might cut the rope entirely. And then this is called karis. This is called being cut off from Hashem. Of course, during teshuva, can always repair the rope. So there is a pipeline of energy. There is a, so to speak, a rope that connects us with our neshama, with our powers in the spiritual worlds. And we can either strengthen that connection by doing mitzvahs, or God forbid, cut and sever that connection by doing averus. And we explained that a man is structured, a person, human being is structured to have 248 different parts of your body and 365 different veins or sinews. And this is 613 together. Therefore, there are 613 mitzvahs. And we now explain that the name of Hashem, which is written Yud Hey and Vav Hey, the name of Hashem is a mechanism, because the letters of the Aleph Beis, the letters of the Aleph Beis in general is what Hashem used to create the world. And each letter of the Aleph Beis is really a pipeline of energy to the world. So the name of Hashem is a mechanism for Hashem giving energy. That's what it means. Hashem has a name. What does it mean? Hashem has a name. Means it describes, the name of Hashem is a description of the flow of energy from the essence of Hashem down to the creation. Each name of Hashem, and there are seven different names of Hashem that the Torah uses to refer to Hashem. Each one of those seven names is another description of another type of energy flow, meaning Hashem is doing something, accomplishing different things. The name of Hashem, which is Yud Kei Vav Kei, Yud Hey and Vav Hey, is the name that Hashem uses to create in general, to create the world. It's the name for the creator, for creation. And we are explaining here that the name of Hashem has two elements. It has Yud and Hey, and then Vav and Hey. And when a person commits a sin, what you're doing is you are separating between the energy that flows from the Yud to the Hey, and then the Vav to the Hey. And if you do a mitzvah, that is the mitzvah of teshuvah, then you repair that separation. So this is all concepts that are discussed in Tanya also at great length. Now we're going to talk about in this chapter that if, or rather because, what causes a person to sin is acting in a foolish way, and what causes a person to stray from doing something that is good for you, instead doing something bad. And in the physical sense, a person says, I'm going to eat some stuff that is not good for me. I'm going to take some stuff, I'm going to take some action that's not healthy for me. Why would you do that? Only because you're not thinking clearly, right? Only because you're not acting in a smart way. You're acting in a foolish way. Well, what is the way to fix that? So everybody understands. If you ate too much food and therefore you have to lose weight, or you did something that is, you know, otherwise not healthy for your body. So the way to fix that is to go to the other extreme. Now you have to go on an extreme diet. Now you have to work out much more than ordinary person. If you never ran yourself down, I mean, just think about physical therapy. If you never had a, God forbid, a stroke, or you never had an accident, you wouldn't need to go through physical therapy and this and that in order to learn to walk again or to learn to talk again. But because you had an event that happened, sometimes against your will, sometimes, you know, self-inflicted, you need to go now to the other extreme, to work harder, to go on a special diet and so on. But the same is true in the area of our relationship with Hashem. If we do something that is a sin, and the reason, of course, we just explained, the only reason a person would ever do a sin is because you're acting foolishly. You're acting against your self-interest in a way that is not the so-called normal way and the sane way to act. Then you're insane. You're acting insanely. Then in order to fix that, you have to act insanely, but on the other extreme. You have to go way beyond the letter of the law in the good sense. So if you went beyond the letter of the law in the bad sense, now to fix that, you have to go beyond the letter of law in the good sense. You have to be crazy when it comes to mitzvahs. You have to go way beyond the normal way of doing mitzvahs. And the Rebbe gives here an example, quoting from the Gemara, of a great sage whose name was Rabbi Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Eloi. And it says that Rabbi Eloi, when he used to come to a wedding, he was a great, venerated old sage, older person, venerated Talmud Chacham, great sage, but he used to dance like a little kid. He used to dance in front of the chasen kalah, the bride and groom, to make them happy, obviously. He would juggle twigs of myrtle. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yitzchak would juggle twigs of myrtle. And Rabbi Zera actually says, this venerable sage is embarrassing us. He makes light of the respect, which is due to Torah scholars. He acts in an undignified way. You can show up at a wedding. Imagine there's a few hundred people at the wedding. And who's there? The big rabbi is dancing there in front of the chasen kalah, the great rabbi of the community, and he's dancing in front of the bride and groom, and he's juggling, and he's maybe turning cartwheels, and who knows what. So this is, Rav Zera says, he's acting in an undignified way. This is not right. But when he passed away, there was a pillar of fire that appeared above his grave, and it didn't let anybody who was not on his level to come close even to the grave. Rav Zera said, you know why he had this great merit? Hashem should show him such a, to everybody, in front of everybody, that he was really amazing tzaddik. The reason is because he danced this way by the weddings, because he went out of his way, because he went way beyond what's, so to speak, normal in the ordinary sense.
Rabbi, I'm sorry, maybe a little bit, not on the topic, you can stop me, but yesterday we had a lesson, like we also do lessons with our Chabad Rabbi in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Rabbi Winder, and we're going now through David Chmelik's, you know, this Samuel 2 book. And yesterday we just talked about how he danced when he brought Torah to Jerusalem, Michal, right, like reprimanded him, and she was punished for that. So it's just like, you know, likes to say HP moment. We just talked about this, so like he also, right, came down to people, and that was the right thing to do, yeah.
That's exactly right. Exact same concept. So this is exact same concept. Absolutely, 100%. So this is what it is. So a person says to themselves, I'm not going to go out of my way. And this is not normal to be so frum, to be so this, and people are making fun of me. And the answer is, yeah, that's exactly what Hashem wants from us. So who are you? Who's your master? You know, who's your boss? Who are you getting excited from? If you walk down the street and you see people acting all crazy, all of a sudden you see somebody you didn't see, you know, husband sees the wife coming from a parents, let's say parents and children, whatever the example you want to see, you didn't see for a long time, and you're hugging and kissing in the street, and you can see these young couples, not the most frum thing to do, obviously, but they're hugging and kissing in the street. They're crazy. They don't care. Why? Because this is the, you know, that's how they're moved. So the answer is, what is your motivation? What are you motivated to do? If you really are excited about the mitzvah, then what people think is not at all relevant. But that's David HaMelech. Here we're talking about a little different, same concept, but a little bit different. And that is, we're trying to fix a mistake. So we're trying to get back on course. And this is basically what Rambam teaches us also, that generally Rambam says a person should stay in the middle course. You know, you always be in the mean, in the middle. Not too much, not too little, da da da. Well, you dress, then you eat. But what happens if a person strays to the wrong side? Then Rambam himself says, then you have to stray to the other side, and then the other extreme, and then you'll eventually come back to the middle. So here we're talking about similar concept, and that is that when a person has done sins, a person has done averus, and we explained that the reason for doing averus is only because you strayed to the wrong side, only because you got caught up by your yetzer hara. Yetzer hara started making you act foolishly. Now you want to fix that. You can't just fix that by going to the middle right away. You got to fix it by going to the other extreme and acting, doing mitzvahs in a crazy way. That's why you find a lot of Baal Teshuva people are, in fact, this is not even something that you have to read about in a book. It just happens naturally. When a person is raised in a secular way, and a person is not raised keeping Yiddishkeit, then they become more observant, whatever it is, keeping kosher, keeping Shabbos, doing davening, putting on tefillin, whatever, lighting Shabbos candle, whatever it is. They are, generally speaking, more excited, more careful, more whatever, than the people who are so-called FFBs, from birth. And that's the way it is, because...
I'm going to interrupt you for 1 second. Actually, yes. my brother's family, they are becoming more religious. I don't know if you can call them Bolshevik yet, but their son is 100% observant now. And, you know, they now have kosher. But like you said, so they, you know, they went kosher. So the tiny details that they pay attention to sometimes is a little crazy. We go to rabbi and ask, is it true that non-kosher plate cannot touch a kosher plate? He's touch a glass plate, it's okay. If you accidentally it touched, it's okay. They're no, you have to go dip it in
100%.
And they go a little crazy, but they're so careful.
So there you said it.
With halibut, I said, the only thing I put on this halibut is halibut. They're but are you 100% sure that halibut was kosher? I'm halibut is halibut. But I asked Rabbi, and he's bread, challah, sure. But they go so crazy.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly right. So you said it right. They go crazy, and that's what we're talking about here. Going crazy. So this is our ordinary speech. We say when a person is acting out of the ordinary, they're going crazy. So what we're saying here is you're 100% right. Now, do you have to do that? No, you don't have to do that. I mean, if you're going to ask a rabbi, do I have to kosher my dishes? There's a lot you have to do, even if you mix the meat, the non-kosher with the kosher, because it has to be with heat, and it has to be with liquid, and it has to be a certain thing. If you're going to get very technical, there's a lot, but that's not how a person should act in the first instance. And definitely when a person is going kosher, as you're saying the example, then you go way beyond. You don't put have people who go kosher and they don't put milk and meat on the same shelf in the refrigerator, on the same shelf, let alone. And so,
yeah,
of course, you don't have to do that. But this is exactly what we're talking about here. Going crazy. So we're talking here about the benefit. And now I'm not saying a person should go crazy in everything that they do all day long. I mean, it gets to be a little too much. But this is, going crazy is therefore the antidote. It's the recipe for getting out of the grip of our Yetzer Hara. So again, you have to reach a mean, you have to reach a medium. But we're talking about here about the concept of breaking through the initial grasp that our Yetzer Hara has on us. And the only way to break through that grasp, that hold, is to go crazy in a certain way. And that's what we're explaining here about the Mishkan. How is the, what's the okay, right?
I'll give them more credit for that now that I understand what's happening.
Okay, right, exactly. So what is the right way to go crazy? That's what we're really talking about here. It's sort of a contradiction in terms, because going crazy means not following, going beyond what the rules require. So that you can't say a right way. Everybody goes crazy on the way they go crazy, right? But yes, in fact, in spite of that, there is a right way. And here we're explaining that the concept of marriage is so amazing, and that's why he danced. So this gives us a little insight into what's the right way to go crazy. When you're faced with something that is of incredible importance, then you have to be way beyond the letter of the law. What's of incredible importance? Marriage. Marriage is the unity between the man and the woman. A man in Hebrew is ish. That's the Hebrew word for man. And it's spelled Aleph Yud Shin. And a woman in Hebrew is Isha, and that's spelled Aleph Shin Hey. And both man and woman share the same two letters, Aleph and Shin. The difference between a man, which is Ish, is that a man has a Yud, and Isha is a man, as a woman has a Hey. Otherwise, they're both Eish, which Eish, Aleph and Shin. Eish spells fire. So therefore, man has a certain passion. Woman has a certain passion. Man and woman are both Eish, fire, passion. And when you put man and woman together, you combine both of those passions, then you have a unity, a couple, a marriage. But the unity has to be tempered and connected and channeled, which is probably the best word, channeled through the Yud and the Hey of the man and the woman, which is Hashem's name. Yud Hey is Hashem's name. If the passion is not channeled through the Torah's way of doing things and the Torah's explanation and Hashem's determination and Hashem's expectations of us, then all you have is Eish and Eish, fire and fire. The couple burns up the relationship with fire, and fire is just burns, just passion itself doesn't last. And in a matter of fact, it gets you into trouble, too much passion. You just start fighting with each other and you don't have a common goal that keeps the marriage. The glue of the marriage is when the couple is both on the same path together, and then each person's passion doesn't negate the other person. Instead, it brings the other person higher. But if that's only if you have the Yud and the Hey, which is the direction that Hashem, the channeling of the passion. If you don't have the channeling of the passion, then God forbid, the Eish burns the Eish, and all you have is fighting, and that's not good. So that's why Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Loi, and as we said, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yitzchak were dancing with such abandon at the weddings, because in fact they were so excited, and they were, by their dancing, they also assisted the chassan and the kal, the bride and groom, in understanding that this is the purpose of getting together, of having the marriage. Anyway, this is the two levels of shtus. The two levels of shtus, which is the Hebrew word for foolishness, folly. There's a level of shtus that is below the line of reasoning, meaning doing things for the wrong reason, being crazy in a bad way, getting in trouble, being crazy. And then there's being crazy in a good way, going way beyond what's required. Now we can understand why Hashem told us to specifically build the Mishkan out of shittim wood. And the reason is because when it comes to the fight, the struggle of approaching the world, it's so easy to get caught up in what the world wants from us. If you want to be standing strong and standing straight and standing tall and following what Hashem wants from us, as opposed to what it's so easy to slip into, the frostbite of what the materialistic world demands from us, the routine of the world, the ridicule that we face from people who say, "Oh, you're so frum. Oh, you're so religious. Oh, you're going to do this. Why don't you do what we're doing? Why don't you be like us?" It's so easy to slip into that. You got to fight against that, and the only way to fight against that is to be crazy in a good way. Because going against society is not normal. What's normal is going with the greater society. And the greater society in every generation was never really looking to be close to Hashem. From the beginning of time until today, the greater society is bad stuff, it's not good stuff. It's against holiness. It's always the minority of people. This is what we say in our davening. This is what we say in that we just celebrated not too long ago, Hanukkah. We say, Hashem, you took us and you gave the minority the victory over the majority. And this is what we talk about, the fact that the Jewish people are a minority among the nations. We're always a minority. Following the minority is very difficult. It's much easier and much more satisfying initially in the very short term to follow the majority. And then eventually you realize you got into trouble and you should have listened to your inner voice, which is Yetzer Tov, your good inclination, and not follow the majority. But that's just the way it is. That's why our kids in school, the same thing. To be the kid on top of the class is difficult. To be the kid who's, the class clown and so on, that's easy. That's, this is what it is. So in order to go and in order to do the good thing, we need to be above reason and not for, and Rebbe gives here a concrete example. Sometimes you have business commitments that are pressing and they don't overrule the conventions for eating and sleeping. In other words, a person says, regardless of my business, I have to go on vacation. I have to have breakfast, I have to have lunch, I have to have supper. But when it comes to studying Torah, when it comes to going to Davin, when it comes to, Rebbe here is talking, to guys going to a minyan, or taking off time, whatever it is, for a Jewish practice. No, I can't do it. I'll do it next week, next time. So a person who is accountable to his soul should ask himself, is there any wisdom in such conduct? You don't know how long you're going to live. In the words of the Medrash Rabbah, you can't tell the angel of death, wait until I settle my accounts. So if you don't know how long you're going to live, and you don't know how long you're going to have in this world to really reach your ultimate goals, and you really reach your purpose, so why, Rebbe says, why would a person who is thinking straight, why would that individual take the bad stuff, the stuff that actually gets you in trouble and make that the focus of your attention, take the good stuff, and that's the stuff that's going to have your neshama, your soul, completely on a good level, and say, and put that in a backseat. Why should a person do this? The only reason is if the spirit of folly, this foolishness, is in control of your life. So what you have to do is you have to stand fast, you have to fix times for doing mitzvahs, and you have to hold on to the spirit of foolishness in doing good stuff on the good side. And I just want to point out to you that this is the end of the first five chapters. And it's interesting that this first five chapters, I mentioned yesterday, the previous Rebbe published for the day of the Yahrzeit of his grandmother, which was the 10th of Shvat in the year 1950, 5710. And that year, that Shabbos, he himself passed away. And Chassidim point to this concept, as you say, the HP, the Hashgacha Pratis moment, where the end of the chapter, the day that he himself passed away, he talks about how a person should think about the day of their passing, and that will give you clarity that will realign your thinking and give you clarity. A person knows, or you can say, we have one more day to live. So how are you going to act? If a person is really serious, boy, are you going to act in a different way? We find this in Pirkei Avos, Ethics of the Fathers. And each of the next the 20 chapters of this particular maimer, of this particular essay, is divided into four parts. Each one has five chapters. At the end of each five chapters, the Rebbe goes back and talks about how a person should remind himself at the end of his days and so on. Just interesting thing. Anyway, let's continue a little bit to the next chapter. Now we're at chapter 6. And I said today we're going to try to get up to chapter 10, running through the concepts very briefly. You should just know, as I mentioned yesterday, that every year, for 20 years, the Rebbe explained each year one of these chapters. And then the next 20 years, again, another cycle. And the next 20 years, the Rebbe started again. And unfortunately, the Rebbe himself passed away only a few years into the third cycle of explaining. So this is the chapter 6. So chapter 6 we're talking about here. We continue talking about the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash. And we continue talking about the promise that Hashem makes that if we act in a certain way, we will merit to have his presence, the Shekhinah, rest amongst us. we will merit to experience spirituality, to be aware of spirituality, to be aware of Hashem's presence, and therefore ultimately to make Hashem happy with us. And that's what it's all about. So now we're going to continue with the Mishkan. The Mishkan was also, we just explained, was built out of wood that was a certain species of wood. The species of wood was called shittim wood, which is a certain species of cedar. And we explained that the reason it's shittim wood, because the word shittim has to do with the word shtus, which means foolishness. And the foolishness has to be a going above the laws of above the way of reason when it comes to a mitzvah, going beyond what's so to speak ordinary and normal, instead of being crazy and doing good things. Now we're also going to talk about the fact that the Mishkan itself was built out of boards. And in Hebrew, the Torah says you should make shittim boards. The word for a board, a piece of wood, is kerashim, keresh. A keresh in Hebrew is spelled kuf, resh, shin, keresh, and that means a board. Now, the Zohar explains to us in the beginning of the Zohar that each of the letters of the Aleph Beis stand for different energies. Each letter has potential for good and potential for bad. Just like Hashem's energy in general could be used for good, could be used for bad.
Can you repeat where are the letters? The letters of the Hebrew alphabet?
The Hebrew alphabet, yeah. The Zohar, in the beginning of the Zohar, in the introduction actually to the Zohar, has a whole talk about the letters of the alphabet and how each of the letters is really a pipeline, a type of energy. It's as if we say the periodic table of the elements, right? We have the Hebrew word, the name for something in Hebrew describes its energy. And it's similar to what we have today in science. We have, we want to say water. We don't say water, we say H2O. Why do we say H2O? Because H2O means it's two atoms of hydrogen, one atom of oxygen. If you put them together, you have water. So if you want to make water, if you have hydrogen and oxygen, you can do it in a laboratory and make it into water. And people think you're a magician. You're not a magician. That's what water is made out of. H2 plus O is water, plain and simple. And if you're a chemist and you want to make a certain medicine or a certain chemical, then you take this element and this atom and this atom and this, and you create a molecule. And then you have a certain new thing. You have a synthetic, you have a this, whatever, right? That's the way it goes. So when you describe it by using the periodic table of the elements. And that's how you describe it. In Hebrew, every single word is the same thing. When we have the word for Eved, a stone, it's Aleph, Bet, Nun. It means that Aleph together with a Bet, together with a Nun, in that order, has to be in that order, will create a stone. Hashem used the energy of Aleph and then applying the energy of Bet and then applying the energy of Nun, and that makes stones. If you have, we just talked about man and woman, Aleph, Yud, and Shin is a man. Aleph, Shin, and Hey is a woman. Just like they say in the DNA, you have this chromosome, that's a male, that's a female. Why is it a male? Why is it a female? Because science says, today we know this, we didn't always know this, that you take a look at DNA, which people didn't know what it was, and you know, used to be. Today we're much more advanced, we're coming closer to Mashiach's time, so Hashem is revealing to us in the science world the mysteries of creation, so we should understand that He is the creator of everything, because everything has a template. Nothing is just because. Everything has a system in order. So we see that there's a creator. The more you study science, the more you see there's a creator. Everything is orderly. Everything has rules. And He says, based on this DNA, I will tell you that the child that is born using this DNA will have red hair, will have this issue that or not, we'll have, you know, this is medical science. This is, you know, we used to have to imagine this. Look at the gift Hashem is giving us by teaching us, by allowing us humans. This is stuff that is out there. Nobody's going to say there's no such thing as DNA anymore. So Hashem is giving us the ability to peek inside His creation. And one day, people will come a little closer and realize that the DNA and everything is based on the spiritual energy. When I say one day, I mean even secular people like us, nor ordinary people, we will be able to see that energy. That's the gift that Hashem will give us when Mashiach comes. Right now, it takes, we say, well, nature has DNA and so on. Tzaddikim can look and see right now. A great tzaddik will look at the energy right now. And that's why you go to a tzaddik, you get a bracha for something. The tzaddik can fix the DNA problem. It's just the same thing as medical science is trying to, and successfully in certain cases, manipulate the DNA in the original matter, or go back to the stem cells and fix a problem by realigning the DNA somehow with the stem cells. You know, again, I can't tell you how it works exactly, but there's no question that this is what medical science is, the next frontier. Going back to with the stem cells and fixing a problem a person has today by fixing up your DNA, plain and simple. And a tzaddik can do the same thing, can fix up the energy flow that is flowing into you so that the sickness doesn't exist anymore. So many stories. Go to the Rebbe, and a person will say, Rebbe, give me a bracha to have a child. The doctors say, impossible, no such thing. You are completely infertile. You will never have a kid. Rebbe says, you'll have a kid in a year. Lo and behold, the guy has a kid in a year. The couple has a kid in a year. Person goes to the Rebbe, says, Rebbe, the doctor says, I have cancer. The Rebbe says, cancer, no cancer. No, doesn't exist. Go take another scan. Take another scan, cancer disappeared. What do you, check your mezuzahs, check your tefillin. Check your mezuzah, check your tefillin, you fix the thing. I just had a lady by me who had a problem with in our community, problem walking, all of a sudden, terrible problem walking. Checked her mezuzahs, problem with a chain of mezuzah. Today, she came to my class last night, walking like no problem whatsoever. Changed her mezuzahs, had a problem. I said this, I put up new mezuzahs. I saw with my own eyes, it happened in the last few weeks. So how many stories like this? So many stories. This is our energy flow. So we understand all of this. At any rate, getting back to the Maamar, getting back to the essay that we're talking about, we're talking now about the letters of the Aleph Beis and how each letter is a pipeline for energy. And Hashem, the Zohar describes, talking about this concept that the letters themselves all were fighting with each other. What do you mean fighting with each other? They wanted that Hashem should start the Torah with them. So the letter Aleph comes before Hashem, start the Torah with me. And each letter said, start the Torah with me. Eventually Hashem chose the letter Bet, because the letter Bet stands for bracha, which is blessing. At any rate, in the course of the conversation, the Zohar explains that the letters Kuf, Shin, and Resh came before Hashem. And Hashem says to the letters that you guys, I don't want to start the Torah with any of you. Why? Because the letter Kuf and the letter Shin and the letter Resh spell the word Sheker, which means falsehood. I don't want to start the Torah with falsehood. Now, the fact of the matter is, however, that the Kuf and the Shin and the Resh, so the Shin itself, the Kuf, Shin, Resh, even though they spell falsehood, they also spell Kesher. So the same letters, if you rearrange it, spell a bond. A bond means something that's strong, a knot. A knot is a Kesher. Falsehood is a Sheker. The other way to rearrange the letters is Kuf Rei Shin, is Keresh, a board. So the Rebbe here is explaining, building on the concept we talked about in the last chapter, where we talk about turning over the craziness of foolishness, turning that over to the craziness of doing good. Meaning, instead of being crazy in a bad way, be crazy in a good way. Go out of your box to be crazy in a good way, instead of going out of your box to be doing bad things and things that are injurious and bad for yourself and your family and your community. So here we're talking about the same concept in the Mishkan. Where do we get the energy from that to do that? We get the energy from the Mishkan. The Mishkan was made out of boards. The word board in Hebrew is keresh. Keresh is the board for the Mishkan, but it could be sheker, falsehood. So instead of having sheker, we take the sheker and we turn it over into keresh. In other words, instead of having falsehood, lies, bad stuff, we convert that into being crazy in a good way, and we have kesher, which is a bond, the connection to Hashem, and a keresh, which is a board that's used for the construction of Hashem's house. So this, the Zohar tells us that we have this connection, we have this ability, and we're explaining here that with a little change, you make a huge difference. A little change, you make a huge difference. So for example, the Rebbe says, if a person says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, listen Jews, Hashem is one, then that's amazing. But if you change the word Echad, and instead of the Dalit, you change the Dalit at the end of the Echad, you change it into a Reish, then it's Acher, and the word Acher means other. God forbid, idol worship, another God, a different God. And then you're messing up the whole, not only are you messing up the meaning of the sentence, but you're completely missing and going contrary to the whole concept of belief in Hashem. You're talking about idol worship. So therefore, what's the difference between one God and other gods, meaning idol worship? A little dot at the end of the resh. You take the resh and you put a little dot on the back of the resh, it turns into a dalet. And then instead of saying other gods, you've all of a sudden fixed everything. The Rebbe will now go and talk about what that little yud is. That little yud is connection to Hashem in the language of Kabbalah through the level of Malchus in the world of Atzilus. And the Malchus of Atzilus, the highest of the four worlds, meaning the 10th level in the highest of the four worlds that we talk about, Atzilus, Bri, Yetzir, Asiya, that 10th level symbolizes humility, subjugation, and complete self-nullification to Hashem. And ultimately, what we're saying here is that the difference between holiness, spirituality, connection to Hashem on the one hand, and arrogance, idol worship, thinking that you're self-powered, thinking that you run yourself, thinking that you can do whatever you want and not what Hashem wants, that difference is a little yud. The little yud represents humility. So when a person is humble, person has self-nullification, a person realizes that they are not the end-all and the be-all, then they are able to open themselves up and connect to Hashem. But if a person is arrogant, a person is self-absorbed, narcissistic, self-absorbed, it's only what I want, it's only what I care about, it's impossible to connect to Hashem. Even if you do the mitzvahs, you're doing it for yourself. You're doing it for yourself, aggrandizement, for your self edification, for your self satisfaction. You're not worshiping your creator. That's a big difference. So even if a person is saying the first number of sentences, Shema, Yisrael, Hashem, Elokeinu, Hashem, which is five words, and then at the end of that sentence, you say Acher. So you said the whole sentence, and you said the first two letters of the next word. But the last letter of the sixth word of the first sentence of Shema, you messed up. So a person says, what's wrong? I said Shema, Yisrael, Hashem, Elokeinu, Hashem, Ach. And the last letter of the last sixth word, I messed up. Why did I mess up? I left out a little yud. So I said Acher. So what's wrong? The answer is, what's wrong? You destroyed the entire content. You destroyed worlds. You destroyed yourself. Connected yourself to the wrong thing. You talked about idol worship. So that's what we're talking about. A person does mitzvahs and a person does everything, and you're missing the whole point. The point is not for yourself. The point is to connect to Hashem. The point is to be Hashem's servant. The point is to be self-nullified. Humility, not arrogance, not narcissism. And that's what we're talking
about.
Yes.
But not another quick question. If I say Shema in Russian, do I have to say it in Hebrew? Because I don't remember it in Hebrew, but I have to say it in Hebrew.
You do not have to say it in Hebrew, no. You can say Shema in any language, Russian, Spanish, English, French, makes no difference. But in whatever language you say it, you should say the word one and not other. You understand? But it's not so much the dalet or the resh that we're talking about. It's the concept. It means that the word echad versus the word acher are two different meanings. But you understand that it's not just the language that we're using. We're not we're not just being superficial here. We're talking about the content, right? So if a person, we're talking about the idea of doing things, the right things for the wrong reason. The right things for the wrong reason. It doesn't mean you shouldn't do it, but if you're doing it already, do it for the right reason. Again, it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. And based on this, I will tell you a story that the Gemara says. The Rebbe does not quote it here in this particular mimer, but there is a story in the Gemara where there was a person who was saying Hashem Acher. That's how he was saying it. He was saying Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Acher. And Rabbi Akiva himself went over to this person and told him, it's terrible what you're doing. He started yelling at him. And he stopped saying Shema. And he got a vision from heaven. Hashem was very angry at him, because this person's intention was correct. He just didn't know how to read. Plain and simple. So again, it's clear to just have the whole picture. It's not just about the superficiality of saying this letter, that letter. It's about where your mind is. It's about where your heart is. And that's clearly what it is. And it doesn't matter what language you say the Shema in. Matter of fact, Halacha in the Gemara talks about the clearly the idea that saying the Shema is not, you don't have to say it in Hebrew. You can say it in any language. But you understand what we're talking about here. It's not the superficiality. It's about where is your mind and heart. And the answer is that if your mind and heart is in the wrong place, then even doing something good is still, you're just not doing the right thing. You have to have your mind and heart in the right place. Again, if a person, you know, just to round out the discussion, if a person is doing the right thing for the wrong reason, we still tell them, keep doing it, because one day you'll do it for the right reason. But if you're already doing it, you might as well do it for the right reason. So this is what it is. We're talking about the correct way of acting in general, and that is here talking about self-nullification. You should not be arrogant, you should not be self-serving, you should not be doing it for yourself. And the advantage of this, what's the advantage of not being arrogant? So this is, anyway, the summary of this is, as the Rebbe builds the concepts that we're talking about here, And as you can see already from all of these the chapters that we've studied, we're already up to chapter 6, is that the point of this essay is the previous Rebbe, who's writing this essay in 1950, is explaining to us how to become closer to spirituality, to our purpose in life. That's what it is. And we understand that coming closer to spirituality, to Hashem, how to reveal the Shekhinah in our life, how to make Hashem happy with us. And we understand that a person is arrogant, that's not Hashem, is not happy with that. You want to be serving Hashem. You want to have Hashem as your focus, God as your focus, not yourself as your focus. And so we're talking here about, anyway, specifically, the difference between the letter Dalet and the letter Resh. And we explained to and we're explaining here that in Hebrew, the meaning of the word Dalet and the meaning of the word Resh is the same. Dalet means poverty. Resh means poverty. That's the Hebrew word. If you say a poor person is a Dal. A poor person is a Rush, a Resh. They both mean the same thing. The question is, what does it mean, poor? What does poor mean? What are you lacking? What are you lacking? So in the case of the Dalet, you're lacking arrogance. You're lacking ego. To lack ego, that's an amazing, wonderful thing. In other words, a person says, I have no ego. I have no ego. So what are you? Are you a poor person? You have no ego? You're the richest person possible. You have no ego. What that means is that you're now open to all kinds of good things. But if a person says, I lack, what do I lack? I lack spiritual sense. I lack appreciation for spirituality. So what does it mean you lack appreciation for spirituality? So what do you have? In that case, I have self-centeredness. If you can't, the opposite of being spiritual is being self-centered. The opposite of the attachment to Hashem, you have to be attached to something. Every human being is motivated by something. Everybody is turned on by something. So what turns you on? Either yourself or outside of yourself. Everybody is motivated by something. So you're either motivated by what makes you happy, or you're motivated by what other people have. Either you're a taker or a giver. That's plain and simple. Either you're motivated by spirituality or you're motivated by materialism. There's no other way. Everybody, or else you're dead. And then you have no feeling. We're not talking about a person that's dead, a person that has no feeling. We're talking about a normal person. A normal person is either motivated by holiness or by the opposite of holiness, by spirit. So you're either a dalit or a reish. Either you're missing ego or you're missing spirituality. The difference, as we said, between dalit and reish is humility, the letter yud. So if a person wants, a person says, I'm a reish, I'm missing spirituality. I don't appreciate spirituality and I just don't get it. It doesn't do anything for me. The answer is, you know why you don't get it? Because you're too full of yourself. You're too worried about yourself. How could you be a spiritual person? How could you be going out of your box if you're all you're worried about is the four walls of your box? Get out of your box. Stop thinking about yourself. And this is, Dalit Rebbe has chapters about this in Tanya, in the first part of Tanya, beginning of Tanya, before we're up to chapter 39, 40 already. Rebbe was talking about this in the earlier chapters, that the idea of breaking down, we're going to speak about later in chapters 22, also concepts, but more so in the earlier chapters. And this is getting out of your box. So there's all the same, all the discussion goes to the same place. We always want to be connected to Hashem, state of not arrogance, but humility, appreciation for spirituality, not appreciation for ourselves, not narcissism, but selflessness and so on. It's all the same thing. And this is the attribute that a person should become a recipient. You should not be a taker in a sense of it's for me. Become a recipient in the sense of accepting in order to do. A disciple should negate the sense of personal identity while you're receiving the master's teachings. A person, a Jew, has to be not doing for themselves. Even though you want Hashem's energy to come into you and you want Hashem's energy to flow through you and you want the Shekhinah and you want the Shekhinah, but the anachronism, the paradox is that in order to have spirituality, you have to have self nullification. In order to have more, you have to be less of yourself, and then you will get more. And the same is true of learning. And as the Rebbe just explained, if you, in order to learn a new concept, you have to accept. You can't just push back and push back. You have to accept, and then you'll be able to understand. You'll grow in understanding, intellectual understanding. In order to have spirituality, you have to open yourself to the spirituality, and then you'll get more. We're going to say later on that Pirkei Avos says that a full vessel cannot accept anything. An empty vessel, you can put a lot of stuff into. Anyway, this is the difference between Dalit and Reish, and we continue a little bit. Or maybe we'll stop with this. Are we okay? So we talked about the letter Yud. I don't know how much time people have. We talked about the letter Yud, and we now relating that to the difference between Yaakov and Esau. Yaakov, who is our ancestor, is humility. And he says, I have all, yeshli kol. Yaakov is holiness. Esau, Yaakov's twin brother. So they're two sides of a coin. Yaakov is humility. Esau is arrogance. And the Rebbe here is quoting the Gemara that says that Yaakov symbolizes humility because he says, I have all, I have everything, I have whatever I need. Esau says, yeshli rav, I have a lot. He wants more. I don't have what everything I need. I want even more. And the Zohar says, a person who is small is really great. A person who is great is really small. Meaning if you're humble, that's the biggest thing because then you can accept infinite. Infinity only is where you're humble. If you think you're already great, then you're not going to get anything more. And that is what this chapter talks about, the difference in Paro, which we're now reading about in the Chumash in these weeks. The Paro says, I am the best, and the Nile is mine. I made it. This is the opposite of the truth. Paro is the symbolism of arrogance, of self-absorption. And therefore, Paro's very name hints at his insensitivity to spirituality. The letters of Paro can be rearranged. His spell, Haref, the back of the neck, a metaphor for stubbornness. He boasted denial is mine. He was ungrateful enough to Hashem to even deny the source of his blessings, the life-giving waters of the Nile that made Egypt the economic power that it was at that time, Paro said, it doesn't come from God, I made it. So this continues, this chapter continues to talk about the terrible, terrible, terrible effect of arrogance and the incredible blessing and amount of blessings that come to a person when they are humble. The ability to accept the Shekhinah into your life only comes when a person is humble, and not when a person is self-absorbed, narcissistic, and arrogant. We're next few chapters, we're going to talk about how this is actually shown in the letters of Kuf, Dalet, and Resh. We're going to get into more concept, but it's all the same idea of arrogance versus humility. So I just want to get up to chapter 11, so we can do that next week if people want to continue that. So anyway, in chapter 9 and 10, we continue talking about how the boards of the Mishkan, through the fact that they symbolize humility, through the fact that they are channels for Hashem's energy, they're able, to connect us with Hashem's ultimate energy, the infinite light. This is how we started this series of 20 chapters. We explained that the Shekhinah, the process of what's called in Aramaic, what's called iskafia, to bend ourselves, to break ourselves, to go against our nature. Our nature is that we want to be self-absorbed. Our nature is that we want to be worrying about ourselves at the moment. And to break that nature and to go against that nature creates electricity, creates energy. And we explained in the first chapter that the energy it creates is the higher form of energy, which is called in the Zohar, the energy of Soved Kol Alman, the energy of infinity, as opposed to the energy that Hashem puts into the four worlds and the 10 Sefirot in each world, as opposed to the energy that is so-called finite energy of Hashem. If it's even possible to say something like that, it appears for us to be finite energy. The infinite energy of Hashem is what we bring down into the world, and that's what we're discussing, is the Shekhinah. So when we talk about bringing down the Shekhinah into the world, the obvious question is, doesn't Hashem create the world all the time and give life to the world all the time? What does it mean we bring the Shekhinah into the world? Hashem is here already. The answer is, the energy that's here already is finite energy. We are bringing infinite level of energy, the level of Soviv Kolaman, into the world and into our personal space. And that is the energy that is in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, through doing the mitzvahs in a way of humility, in a way of self-nullification. And this is, we conclude here, chapter 10. This is implicit in the teaching of the sages. They shall make me a sanctuary, I will dwell within them, not within it, the Mishkan, but within each and every individual Jew. When we transform darkness into light, meaning when we go against our nature and we take what appears to be bad stuff, our bad nature, and instead, or the negative world that's trying to push us to do bad things, and instead we ignore it and we actually convert it by using it for good stuff, for serving Hashem. In other words, Hashem gives us money, Hashem gives us health, Hashem gives us all kinds of stuff which we could use if people use their money and their health and their fact that to run all kinds of places where you shouldn't run, to do all kinds of things you shouldn't be doing. But instead, we use our energies that Hashem gives us to do mitzvahs, to do good things, to help people, and so on and so forth. So then we are turning darkness into light. Darkness doesn't mean pitch black darkness. It means potential for getting into trouble. We use it instead for doing good. This is called avoda. This is called the work, especially if we are naturally schlepped by our nature into being self-absorbed, which every person is naturally self-absorbed. It's just the human condition. So we push back against that self-absorption, and instead we go out of our box. We do things in a way that's crazy good, and therefore Hashem is now happy with us, and Hashem, or the person who conducts himself in this matter, then Hashem comes down into our space, and this is bringing the Shekhinah, and this is bringing the infinite level of energy into our space. And this is concluding chapter 10. So we zoom through these 10 chapters. The chapter begins to explain how the Kesher and the sheker of the world can be transformed into keresh, meaning we take what appears to be negativity, appears to be contrary to holiness, and instead we use the very nature, the very things that appear to be stopping us, we take those things and we use them for holiness, for mitzvahs, then we enable Hashem to say, I have come back to my garden, to mean spirituality, holiness, godliness is manifest, becomes evident and clear that Hashem is the boss and becomes manifest in the world. And then even the angels or the neshamas in Gan Eden want to come and they want to hang out with us because we are so connected.